Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman. Thank you for listening to AFR, wherever you may be tuning in, or if you're listening on the internet or on one of the apps, our apps that reach people on the smartphones and the other mobile devices. However you're listening to AFR, we appreciate it very much. Eva Tagliano in studio with me today. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And on Wednesdays, Abraham Hamilton III joins us. Abe is in studio. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Ed, we got some good news on our we raised a lot of our listeners helped us raise a lot of funds for the orphanage.
Yeah, we were hoping to raise yesterday for India Partners. This was for the, as you're talking about, the orphanage for boys.
We partner with.
We partner with them. We were hoping to raise $148,000 yesterday, one day. One day only.
Right, one
now,
day only.
I haven't even heard the most recent numbers. What I heard this morning was $216,000. So they're not only going to be able to break ground before September 15th, which is what the law that they were dealing with dictated.
In India.
In India. And they're not only going to be able to build this orphanage, but now they're going to be able to have enough to make improvements to the third floor of the girls' orphanage. So this is just was a real, you know, a real great day from our listeners. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Our listeners, Abe, just blew the doors off yesterday.
That's amazing. And it just goes to show that, you know, and tax documents have proven this. History records this. Christians are the most compassionate people in the world.
Right.
Christians respond to
those bad old Christians.
Yeah, that's an absolute lie.
Hateful Christians.
Christians are the most compassionate, caring, and giving people in the world.
And so, our listeners, what we wanted to do, we wanted to have American Family Radio listeners, we wanted to pass the offering plate for one day and say, help us build this orphanage.
Right.
And for in the name of Jesus Christ, as a witness in India, we know the India Partners is the organization we worked with. They're already on the ground there.
Right.
So AFR doesn't have... You know, we don't have.
We were helping them.
Yeah, we don't have ministry. We don't have ground ministries in India, but who knows? We may one day, because if we conquer the world,
because that's what we're after, right?
Right. That's the mission of Christians: to conquer the world. Right.
I've been in enough business meetings and churches to know I don't want Christians running the world,
ruling the world
in any kind of theocratic way.
I know, I'm kidding. I just bring this up to say thank you to everyone who made a gift towards this, because the orphanage is going to be built to, or the addition to the orphanage, I guess I should say. It's a boys.
They're going to build the boys. See, what happened when we raised money for India Partners last year.
Right.
To put in a floor or two, I think. And then the local government came back and said, oh, you can't have boys and girls in the same orphanage. So now
unless
India
they
Partners,
identified as a... No, just kidding.
Yeah, I don't think...
I should not have done that. That was an unnecessary interruption about a ministry effort, and I was injecting...
But it was funny.
Bad PC humor.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so then India Partners was kind of stuck, because they only had one orphanage. They had the boys and girls on separate floors, but Hindu culture is pretty strict. So so now they were up against it, and they came to us, and they said, can you help us maybe raise money towards a boys' orphanage? You know, we were hoping to get our goal was to get 1,000 people to give yesterday. And
right.
Again, last numbers I heard, which was last night, was over 1,400 people had given.
Praise God.
Praise
yeah.
God.
Amen. Let me
praise
give a hand clap.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah,
a hand clap.
So thank you for all those who...
And
these numbers, by the way, don't even include the number of people, I think, who went online. I may be wrong about that.
Okay.
I think this was just people who called in to the number. So we're going to try to get final numbers here towards the end of the week. But thank you to our listeners this was a great opportunity, and many of you came through. So,
hey, about a week and a half ago, we buried Donald Trump politically. Remember, said it was over for him. Remember how far he was supposed to be behind in the polls and everything?
Yeah, I've been watching it.
Now he's back up. Now he's back up, and now I'm not saying he's ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, he's ahead in some national polls.
The L.A. Times poll has him up by about 4 points.
Which is amazing. The L.A. Times poll.
Yes.
I know.
And now he's heading to Mexico. This is very interesting.
Donald Trump goes to Mexico? That ought to be a reality show. Is he going to Mexico? Now, because you're leading in a national poll, which is this one L.A. Times poll.
It essentially is meaningless right now.
Yeah, really you have to look at the swing states, the battleground states, which are about, I guess generously you would say there are 10 of them, maybe. But supposedly he's still trailing in those by a few points behind Hillary Clinton. But polls are usually right because a lot of these polling firms that say all the same thing.
Well, that didn't hold true for the primary season, though.
How you mean?
Early on, Trump wasn't polling at the top, but he then began to do something. Right. I guess you are right.
Well, I'm just saying, if all the polls say the same thing, then I give them credibility. That's me personally. They're usually right within, as they say, the margin of error. So I would say, but here the thing with Donald Trump is, for both of these, for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, each one of them have high negatives. And you don't know how that's affecting people's psychology and how they're going to vote.
Or if they come out to vote.
Yeah.
Or if they come out to vote. These people could say in Ohio, for example, she's ahead 3 points on election day, but that's not likely voters. Or the people who said they're for Hillary Clinton, their vote is suppressed because they don't like her. They're only voting for her because they don't like Trump.
And Bernie Sanders didn't get the nomination.
Right? So they're deciding that's not a good enough reason for me to go vote today. Mm. Where on the other hand, you could have people saying Trump could be energized because he's fired them up. I'm just saying those kind of dynamics will enter into the equation on election day itself. And, of course, we've got the debates leading up to election day.
When's the first debate? Is it next week?
September 20-something.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's got it marked.
It's 20-something because I'm – I've got that day. No, I've got that day marked. Because I'm gonna have a. We're gonna have a cookout over at the house, and
Michael Buffer.
We're gonna have a pre-debate meal, there's gonna be.
You have plenty of carbs, so you can stay awake for the whole thing. I don't think anyone's gonna have a problem staying awake. If Donald Trump in this debate, it's gonna be. There's gonna be fireworks.
How do you prepare for Trump? If you're Hillary Clinton's team and they got a mock draft going in there, who plays the part of Trump, babe? Who's over there playing the part of Trump?
I don't think anybody can. I don't think anybody can. I guess you could probe the dark recesses of Bill Clinton's corrupt mind and project Trumpian.
I think you could. You could have somebody
the thoughts and opinions expressed for those of Abe Lincoln.
I think you could have somebody, and what you do is you say, okay, we want you to be as insulting
Jimmy
as
Fallon?
Possible. Well, no, Jimmy Fallon's too goody-goody. He couldn't
have
Donald
Trump. Fallon playing the part of
Don Rickles. I don't even know if he's still alive, and Abe probably doesn't even know who Don Rickles.
I do not. I was thinking who Don is Rickles.
Don Rickles. That's good. Don Rickles. So have somebody channel Don Rickles.
His whole shtick was insulting. Remember,
he was.
He'd do stand up, and he could insult people. And so you get Don Rickles to play Donald Trump.
Hey, they're going to bait. They're going to try to bait Trump. Hillary is that's what they're working on right now. I've already heard this, and it would be a smart move.
I think so.
Don't you think, Abe?
I do think that would be smart.
Try to bait him.
He can't keep his fingers off of Twitter.
What you say is this man does not have the temperament to be president. And then that alone will cause him potentially to say, I do have the temperament to be president, Crooked Hillary. and then she can say, see what I mean, people?
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yep.
But now Trump is also smart enough, I think, to be told she's going to do this to you.
I think so.
You can't take the
And
bait.
He's a good counterpuncher.
Yes.
So if I'm in his corner advising him, I'm saying, look, here's what she's going to try to say about you, like you don't have the temperament. And here are your cards. Memorize these comebacks, and you turn those attacks around on her. So, you know,
if he were to say something like, well, at least I'm not, they don't have the country for sale.
Yes.
If he says that, then that changes the whole subject from his temperament to your corruptness.
You want to put your opponent on the defensive.
Yes.
Right.
So, I mean, when I was on the debate team, that's what you did. You answered the argument, and then you threw something right back on them, so they spent all their time next time they were up.
That's great strategy, isn't it?
That's
so they
good.
Couldn't advance their arguments. They had to respond to your accusations. And so
you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of the show. Here on AFR, I'm Tim with Ed and Abe. What do you think? Abe, you probably in law school, you had debate.
Yeah, I did mock trial and moot court. And you guys are hitting it right on the nail on the head. I can easily see Trump saying, I have the temperament to make sure four Americans don't die in Benghazi.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Right.
That would be, huh?
That's exactly what he does.
I have the temperament to love Americans, especially when they're in danger on September 11th.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Say, now what about, do we have our guest with us yet? Okay. I want to ask you about.
I'm voting for Abe.
I want to ask you. Now, he's going to meet with the president of. Is Trump meeting with the president of Mexico? Why would the president of Mexico agree to meet with Donald Trump?
Well, in fact, now he's got the current
president today.
Mm-hmm. The current president is Enrique Peña Nieto. The previous president, Vicente Fox, is calling Nieto a traitor to Mexico for even meeting with Trump. But I think Nieto is doing the right thing because it's possible that Trump could be president.
Yeah.
And he needs to have a meeting. And, I mean, Trump is bringing all his bigwigs with him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think he's bringing Pence. He's bringing Sessions.
This is almost like a presidential meeting.
Yes. It makes Trump
It elevates
look
Trump.
Good, elevates
yeah.
Trump.
So I would say, okay, so that's what I'm wondering. So Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, is lambasting the current president for saying you're a traitor for meeting with Trump. You don't meet with Trump because you are elevating him to a look of being president.
Yeah.
Well, I think his accusation is that Trump is an idiot and you shouldn't meet with him because his views are poison. But and my understanding is this is the first time that a candidate has met with the president of a country of Mexico. So this is a smart move. What if Trump comes out with because they're going to release a statement afterwards, although they're not going to have a full press conference together talking about the president.
Where are they
of
meeting?
I think it's in Mexico.
Well, it is in Mexico. The presidential. Palace. There's been threats from some drug cartels, so there are concerns about
drug cartels. They're mad about
the cartels are politically astute. They don't want to mess up their freight train of commerce.
Wait a minute now.
This is not a good economic policy decision, President Nieto. So we object to your
We don't want anyone shutting down the border.
Right.
If you're a drug cartel,
that would sort of prove Trump's point.
If the Mexican
drug cartels are angry because he's in their country, they must be worried that once he's president, should he become, he would do something to crack down on them.
Yeah.
Listen, what a coup it would be.
Yeah, go ahead.
What a coup it would be if in their statement, the president of Mexico and Donald Trump release a statement saying, we have laid the groundwork for the possibility of controlling the border. And, I mean, that would not only elevate Trump, but it would, I think, would increase his favorability rating amongst Hispanics in this country.
I think so. And I think that the meeting was the product of President Nieto extending an invitation to both he and Hillary Clinton. And Trump was the first one to accept.
So now Hillary would look like Johnny come lately.
He's also the first one to go down to Baton Rouge.
Yes.
Yes.
This is
after
becoming,
the floods.
Yes.
And Obama basically had to be pushed into that.
Yeah, right. And I think the Clintons have.
And Hillary never went, did she?
I'm not aware of
her. I don't remember her any news media about her going.
Okay, so anyway, I'm sorry, Abe.
No, I'm just saying I think the Clinton campaign has released a statement saying that they will meet with President Nieto at an appropriate time.
You know, it doesn't. It just doesn't look good. Trump jumps on it and goes down there. He's going to get all this press coverage
initially.
He's taking
his whole team?
He's taking his whole team down there to talk about these. He's taking Rudy Giuliani, Reince Priebus, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is going, and they'll be meeting not only with President Nieto, but also other high-ranking Mexican officials.
Why is the president of Mexico meeting with Donald Trump? What is the real reason?
Well, like Abe said, he extended it to both candidates. So at least was, I think, gracious enough to say, well, I can't just say Hillary Clinton because then it looks like I'm trying to influence the election. So to both of them, and now Trump is the first one to say yes. You're gonna have video. You're gonna have media coverage of this whole team going in. Giuliani and these others that I mentioned, the former New York City mayor. All these folks going in to meet, and then they will release a statement.
Can only help Trump, I think.
And I think this is big. This is really big.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's maybe as big as Trump's outreach to the black community that he has initiated over the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's completely
against the grain. And that's been smart, too.
You
know what I've noticed about Trump, and I've only watched him three or four times in the last 2 weeks, but he's still got his New York, way about him.
Right.
But he's not unhinged.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's talking he's not yelling at people. He's making more, he is yelling some, but it's not crazy talk. He's saying to the African American community, look, you voted Democrat for 40 years. You gave him, and what is it? Where has it got you?
What have you got to lose?
I think it's a smart play to say, listen, we need jobs and opportunity and education, and we need to change direction here for the broad concerns of the African American community. You've been used, is what he's saying, by the liberals. Yeah. And why don't you look at what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and. The only thing I would suggest, as if anybody could suggest anything to Donald Trump, is in using his language, I think it would do him well to couch it in terms of understanding the impact of the inner city communities affects all Americans.
Right.
So
that's good.
I would encourage him to couch it in terms like this and say, look, we have done this in our inner cities for this much time.
Right.
And this has been the result.
Right.
We have suffered as a nation.
Right.
As a result of these policies in these cities.
He was saying that last night.
And, so I think that's a deft touch to add.
Right. He was making it more than just an African-American issue. He was making it. This is the policies of the Democrats have been bad for black folks and the country in general.
Mm-hmm.
Inner cities.
Mm-hmm.
The inner cities have been led by the Democrats for four decades.
Yes.
And look what they look like. So he's making an appeal.
Yeah.
And that's also going to appeal to Hispanics.
That's exactly right.
Because they're coming to this country for a better life. I think if he continues, if he talks economic prosperity and
national security,
I think he's going to begin to make some serious inroads into the independents.
And stays fairly calm.
And stays, yes, stays fairly
stays
calm.
Give his phone to his kids at 9 o'clock at night.
Yes. That's been your suggestion.
Yeah, I think we need
no tweeting.
Yeah, Dad, 9 o'clock, hand me the phone. You're not tweeting? No, give me the iPad from under the pillow. You're not down on the iPad either. You're gonna watch, Travel Channel, and you're going to bed.
I'll tell you one other thing that I've noticed, and again, this has... I'm not saying this has any connection with political reality. This is my own personal observation. I watch, if I'm not watching sports or news or something, I watch a lot of TV Land. We've talked about that.
Right.
Hillary Clinton is running the same ad. She's been running the same ad for 2-3 weeks, maybe longer. And I'm thinking, if you're on the fence, you're getting bored. And I think it makes people cynical. If you've got the same anti-Trump ad,
energy's not there for her.
Yes, that's what it looks like.
If she wins, she'll back into the presidency, won't she, Abe?
Yeah, if she wins, it will be solely because she backed in. Like
there'll be no mandate.
No, I mean, she may manufacture one. I mean,
she's got 60 anywhere from 60 to 70% of people say she's dishonest.
Yeah,
that's hard strong. To overcome. And of course, the Trump's negatives are well documented as well.
Yeah.
However, I'm wondering now whether Trump has more of an upside, if that's the word you want to use, than she does, because he may be doing some things to, quote, reach out. And I don't know that people don't believe that they may believe that he's a little crazy, but I don't think they believe he's fundamentally dishonest. You see what I'm saying?
Right. And that's why that first debate is going to be so critically important.
If he can prove to just 10% more of Americans that he's not
not
going to do something crazy when he gets in there,
mm-hmm.
not a nutcase, as you say,
right.
I'm not volatile, that's what they're going to want. And he has shown tendencies to be that way. But if he keeps on track now and is able to, and she can't overcome that, 60. Think about that. Those are people that go.
Well,
dishonest.
I think the easy way for Trump to overcome, like this ad that's been running on TV land, it uses several clips of him saying pretty outlandish kind of things.
I know the one you're talking about, and I've seen it now that I don't pay attention to it much.
Yeah, he talks about we're gonna beat the stuffing out of, you know.
It's cherry picking a few crazy things that he said over the campaign.
What he should do is say, listen, I'm not a polished politician like Hillary Clinton, who's in bed with big money. I'm a New Yorker, and this is the way we sometimes talk.
Right.
Okay, and when I'm talking about our enemies— I'm not going to use flowery language. So if you want to count that against me, that's fine. But this is the way New Yorkers are. I mean, something like that to take the edge off the implication that he's unhinged.
Yeah.
Just say, listen, come to New York. You're going to get a lot of that.
Yeah.
But we're a successful city.
Yeah. Right. And he can say, and I'm a toned down New Yorker.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
And then ask the questions. When you got ISIS barreling down on you, got the economy where it is, do you really want a polished politician
who's going to do anything to? I think Trump ought to follow this up with a trip to Russia to meet with Putin and come back and say, you know, if I'm president, I've talked to the president of Russia. Here's how we're going to approach the Middle East problem with ISIS, and maybe go to China. I mean, it's not going to hurt him.
Just take a world tour.
Take a world tour and say, listen, I'm meeting with these, because his foreign policy credentials would be suspect since he's simply a businessman.
That's a good way to build foreign policy points.
Well, leaders.
Now, China, he is not going to get an invitation.
No.
But
China, unless he's president, then they.
But you know, reach out to them.
I know.
You might get an invitation.
There comes a time when a person agrees to meet with you, not because they want to.
Right.
But because you've earned enough muscle, credibility, power, influence to where they can't help but meet with you. Well, Target, I'm sure, didn't want to meet with American Family Association.
You're right.
But when 1 million people sign a petition in 1 week to boycott your company, you meet with those people.
Right.
You don't
because to not meet with them makes the situation worse.
And so this may be the situation with the Mexican president. You know, may have said, listen, this guy may become the next president, and I at least want to have some say.
Right.
And it's smart for the Mexican president to do that, too, because should Trump become president, it's going to have a direct and immediate impact upon Mexico.
And if you have a relationship, the beginning of a relationship with Donald Trump, it only helps.
Also, this idea that Trump is xenophobic or that he's racist, I don't think... They want you to believe that. The liberal media wants you to believe that. Now, he said some things that hasn't helped himself in that regard.
Right.
But I don't think that's at his core. At his core is, listen, we got tens and hundreds of thousands coming over here illegally. We got to stop this.
Right.
This doesn't make any sense for our country. That's at his core.
Most people agree.
Yeah, we'll be back in a minute.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Darrell Bach, author of How Would Jesus Vote?
The right and the left both cherry pick from the Bible, and that robs us of the discussion we need to have about life in a fallen world and the tensions that political issues raise for us.
We'll also talk with Stephen Miller, author of A Visual Walk Through Genesis. That's next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR, and online at AFR.net.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. One of the reasons lots of folks are voting for Donald Trump is because of his tough immigration policies. We cannot have a nation without borders. American sovereignty matters. The rule of law matters. I support Mr. Trump's plan to build a wall and secure the border and to send those living among us illegally back to where they came from. And most of that can be accomplished by simply enforcing immigration laws already on the books. But in recent days, Mr. Trump and his surrogates have been sending mixed messages, suggesting the campaign may be willing to soften its immigration plan. Tonight, Mr. Trump will address that issue, and I hope he clears up the confusion, because this is a matter of national importance. American lives are at stake. Just ask the families of Kate Steinle and the fire chief in Laplace, Louisiana. If we had a secure border, they might still be alive. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. You're listening to American Family Radio on the internet. We're at afr.net. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Abe Hamilton here on this Wednesday. We have been discussing the fact that Donald Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, is in Mexico, meeting with the president of Mexico, assuming they're having Mexican food, but we don't, that's not been confirmed.
Right.
Huh? We don't know that for certain. But it is, and then Mr. Trump is supposed to have a major speech today on this issue, too, about the wall and other things. Abe, is that true?
Well, I don't know exactly what he's going to talk about, but
it's some kind of major policy speech.
It's supposed to be. It's billed as a major policy speech, which I will be
immigration speech
eager to hear. And I'm hopeful that he strikes a tone that distinguishes illegal immigration from immigration. Oftentimes,
yes,
in the debate,
yes,
people say immigration.
No, the liberals want to confuse that.
Yes,
on purpose.
Right.
Yeah, and he doesn't need to allow them to do that. He needs to make it clear today. He's talking about illegal,
yes,
immigration.
Yes.
And what he's going to do to stop it.
Absolutely right.
Because we've all read the stories. Mm-hmm. This has, under past presidents, both Republican and Democrat, our border has been has not been secure. And that's one of the things, and everybody knows it. We see, what was it, 2 years ago, 2 summers ago, when they had, 100,000? Or so.
You're talking about all the kids that were coming up through
Central America?
They were
coming in from Central America. They were coming right through Mexico.
Yeah.
And
many of them suffered terrible abuse, too, mm-hmm, along the way.
Well, they got here, and remember, the Democrat congressman from that area of Texas appealed to President Obama, please come visit this. This is a humanitarian crisis in our own country. And President Obama would not go to the border to visit and see this for himself because he didn't want to draw attention to his failure to secure the border.
And it would have, because the media would have been flocking there.
Yes, they were saying that the media would have said, how are you allowing this to happen to your own country where people are flooding in by the tens of thousands and you're doing nothing to stop it?
Well, the answer is his refusal to visit goes right along with his policy position concerning the border, where, you know, the Democrat Party, for whatever, you know, what you want to say about it, has been in favor of embracing illegal immigration.
Right. That's the reason they have sanctuary cities and Democrat-controlled big cities.
And that's also the reason why they champion the voter ID laws.
Yeah. The whole thing is to ultimately destroy the Republican Party. That's the objective. This is my opinion. We've talked about this before. This would be, if you flood America with people who are illiterate, are people who are dependent on the government, are people who are, and by illiterate, I mean they're literate in their own language, perhaps, but they don't know English.
Right.
You're seeing this trouble all over the country. Mm-hmm. Kids are showing up at schools and
can't speak a word of
English.
Right.
So, but if you flood the country with enough of those folks, and I'm not degrading in any way their humanity.
Right.
They're
But they come from socialist countries.
Yes, they do.
Right.
They're going to vote Democrat all day, every day.
Right.
And President Obama knows this.
Yeah.
So you're planning for the future destruction of the Republican Party. So that's a reason that you don't care how many people come in here illegally.
Yeah, and it's like I said, you have the combination of the Democrat position of basically allowing open borders combined with their consistent, staunch opposition to voter ID laws and their celebration of them being struck down, because they have made the political calculation that if they can turn states like Texas blue.
Right.
Right.
Then you,
it's over.
You will not have another non-Democrat president for at least the next 50, 60 years.
Right.
Because you'd have New York, California, and Texas, which have the largest quantity of electoral votes. And that is the play that they're trying to maneuver and trying to manage. And concerning the language issues, you guys know that I started my legal career in Houston. Every court in Houston, Texas has to be staffed with translators.
Yeah.
With translators.
It's like the United Nations, you know, except that it's not, you know, 170 languages.
It's specifically Spanish.
Right.
Right. And, so that's, you know, language, culture, borders. I heard Michael Savage, mm-hmm. radio host, say that. It makes a lot of sense to have a country.
Absolutely. And it's not original to Michael Savage. For example, Noah Webster wrote his 1828 dictionary of the American English language because he saw that the fundamental defining characteristic of a nation is couched in its language. And he sought to craft this dictionary in order primarily to have a common vernacular in the new nation of America through which to convey the gospel is the primary reason, which is why the 1828 dictionary has lots of biblical examples to explain how words are defined. But it's not a new concept. It's an ancient concept, actually. And when one of the defining characteristics of national existence and sovereignty and independence is a language.
Right. And you know, you said, what was it, language, culture, borders?
Yeah.
Okay. So culture includes religion, okay? It includes your ideas about living in a republic.
Yep.
It includes your ideas about citizenship. Mm-hmm. It includes all those kinds of fundamental—
Respect for the law.
Respect for
the law.
All those kinds of common ideas, you know, are part of our culture. So when Christians say, listen, this country was founded on the Judeo-Christian faith and the worldview, the Judeo-Christian worldview, it's not that we're saying nobody else can worship the way they want. We are saying the foundational principles are found in the Judeo-Christian worldview. That's all we're saying.
Absolutely.
That can be proven.
And it can be proven. And it's not an attempt to make this into a theocracy. We're just talking about the facts of the matter. And we believe, sincerely, that to undo that is to pull on one of the strings that could unravel the country. just like language, just like borders.
But I think the secular progressives want to do that.
Well, globalists.
I hate
yeah.
to say that about yeah. anybody who's an American, but I think the secular progressives, I don't know if it's because they're globalist. You know, I'm still studying this. This is a but I, you know, you do you think some of them believe in a I see the bridge ahead into Bible prophecy.
Well, let me just interject here because I know you're pointing it at A, but I'm writing a feature for the AFA Journal, and I'm doing some reading. I found a book online, a PDF versions from a man named Charles Edward Merriam, M-E-R-R-I-A-M. He was a progressive at the beginning of the last century, was a political science professor at the University of Chicago, but was an advisor to presidents, including Taft and Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He, in this book that I'm reading, A History of American Political Theory, he says the ultimate goal of progressives is a one-world government. Now, this book is written in 1903. It says the ultimate goal is a one-world government, and they see the battle over policy, but really political ideology, as the state, he even says it, state versus individualism and nationalism. So these are things, when I say nationalism, pride in your country. Mm-hmm. So you have Europe letting all kinds of people into their countries, and there's talk of, well, France may cease to be French. Germany may cease to be German. And I think that at least the globalists amongst the progressives, that's their ultimate goal. And Charles Merriam said, we are heading in that direction, but the time has not yet arrived.
This is in 1903?
1903. When I read that, I thought, wow, this stuff is
right.
This is not new.
No.
Wow.
It's not new. And it's not surprising. Some of the same advocates for globalism, for example, happen to be those campaigning in England opposing Brexit.
Right.
You have those. Why would these Americans be trying to get involved in England? Well, one of the touchstones of progressivism is a bent. And I'm not saying every progressive is, but at the intellectual elite level, some of the thought framers of progressivism, they are staunch advocates of globalism.
And that's why you would find progressives. Why? You ask myself, why do progressives seem to hate America? Why are they always running down America? Why are they always saying America's this and America's that? And yeah, we have some ugly, you know, moments in our past and times in our past history. But you look at the principles of America that have drawn us past and through those difficult times. Okay, and you say this is still a really good country. So why does President Obama go around the world apologizing for America? I think it is because the progressive mindset, they may not do this consciously every time, the progressive mindset is no nation is better than any other, and these walls, these boundaries have to be removed. People have to stop thinking about themselves as Americans first, or as French first, or as British first. And when we do that, we can have a one-world government. Because I've always said this may be a little harsh, but one collar on the dog is better than 1,000 collars on 1,000 dogs. So I think that they want to control people. One government to control the people of the world. And like you said, Tim, that does point to Scripture.
Right. There's, to my metaphor about seeing the bridge ahead into Bible prophecy, and we can talk about that, but we're going to spend some – what we need to do is a couple shows on that. Ray Pritchard was talking about that with me the other day. He studied this, Kirby's on. Kirby Anderson is on with us from Dallas. Kirby, good morning.
You there, Kirby? Okay,
it's quietest Kirby's ever been. I don't know. Maybe he's mad at me about something.
His silence
speaks volumes.
He's giving us a silent treatment. Kirby, yeah. You there?
Oh, we may have some kind of technical.
We can't hear him. Hey, President Obama, with his policies and his actions and his inactions, you remember one thing about President Obama? Well, I'm just learning today. I don't want to be scatterbrained here. I just saw this on the news, and it fits right in with what you're talking about, Ed. And President Obama now has commuted the sentences of more men and women than the past 10 presidents combined.
Mm-hmm. Now,
Abe, yeah. Abe, you've been in this. You've been in the law and government part of criminal law and so. What does it mean? What does this mean when I read this statistic that President Obama has commuted the sentences of more men and women than the past 10 presidents combined? What are we saying here?
These are federal sentences. This is a story I mentioned before. These are federal convictions. These are people who have been convicted either by a jury, a judge, or by a plea agreement, and they have been sentenced federally. And the president, using his executive power, has unilaterally declared a reduction in their sentences. Now, to be fair, we shouldn't confuse sentence commutation with pardons.
Okay.
It's not the most presidential pardons. There are some that have exceeded him in pardons, but in commutation of sentences, this is the case. And so what has happened is that the president has gone in and he said to have reviewed the cases of all of these people. There's one example. There's a guy who's a drug dealer who used his position at a Miami airport to smuggle in millions of dollars worth of drugs from overseas. And the president deciding, we can't get the laws changed. I'm just going to commute the sentences. So it's important to distinguish commutations of sentences from pardons, but to say that it's the most
More than the past 10 presidents combined.
But not pardons, he's saying. This is commutations.
Right, it's commutations. There are other presidents who've granted more pardons, but sentence commutations.
So you're saying by doing this, and I'm sure his staff has done most of the reviews, not him personally, but what he's saying is these people, we're not saying these people weren't guilty, we're just shortening their sentences.
That's exactly right.
Let me ask you something. I read an article yesterday, this is the first I'd heard of this, where George Soros and his organization have been funneling money, tremendous amounts of money, into big city elections for the district attorney's office because the DA has the greatest amount of leeway for making deals and shortening sentences. And the article was pointing out that progressives want a complete revamping of the American criminal justice system. And I'm not opposed to some of the ideas in terms of getting people with problems with drugs, not sending them to prison first, but getting them treatment, those kind of things. I want to learn that, so I'm open to some of that. But I don't like the idea of Soros. Of course, there's the Koch brothers and others from the conservative side. But this was interesting. I had not heard about money being funneled into. And in one case, I forget the city, but the Republican dropped out simply because it was unheard of amounts
Soros
of money.
Soros is the billionaire. I guess he's an American citizen, but he's.
That's a good question. I think he is.
He's an American citizen.
But he's from Europe. He's from Europe. But he's the world's most famous secular progressive.
Right.
They used to be called the secular.
He describes himself as kind of like God.
Is that what he said?
He says, "My influence is felt everywhere, but you rarely see me."
Oh my gosh.
He said that?
He says that about himself.
Oh my gosh. Wait till he meets the real deal.
Right.
Wow. But back to my point about you have somebody like President Obama who does things which seem one thing after another that seem against American interest. You know what I'm saying? Against your own country's interest, and you just begin to say, you're subverting your own country because you don't believe in what it has been or what its values are. These examples are multiple over the presidency. I just mentioned one. commuting more sentences than 10 presidents prior to him is an example of he doesn't believe in law and order and punishment. Now, emptying out Gitmo.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it? Think about that for a minute. Just think about that logically. Why does a president of the United States take such a passionate view of letting terrorists free that we're holding? Why is he lay up at night thinking, how can I let these people out and let them roam free around the world again? So what drives a president of a United States to do that? I can't process that, Abe, unless some people say, well, he's a Muslim, idiot. Talking to me, Tim. They're saying that now to their radio. I've heard people tell me that. I can't. That's a subject for another day. By the way, 20 to 25% of the general American public, not just right-wing nuts, believe that he is a secret Muslim, and that would explain why he does the things he does. Now, we're getting into a little bit of on the edge here, but you see what I'm saying? Yeah. But you do. But the fact is, he does want to empty out Gitmo, and he is doing it, and you wonder why. Why do you trade 5 Taliban for 1 deserter? Why does somebody do that? Is that a reasonable question to ask about somebody who's supposed to be looking out for the interest of our own country? Why do you send a plane with 400, how much money?
$400 billion.
Why do you send it? Why do you send an unmarked plane, a plain white, whatever it was, plane with foreign money to Iran? So you're obviously trying to hide this fact. Why don't you send that to the Ayatollahs, who are our sworn...
Well, in that case, this is my understanding of it. It was supposedly money that we had agreed to pay because of some kind of arms deal from 1979. But now the Obama administration has admitted that the timing of that payout was meant to coincide with our desire to get... So. It may have been money that we had obligated ourselves to pay, but the timing was to get prisoners released. So, in a sense, it was a payoff. But
to a completely different Iranian government.
Yes, absolutely.
But why?
No other president paid.
Right.
Right. But this is the Iranian government that's sworn the destruction of Israel, is probably fostering more of the terrorism and funding it in the world than any other country.
The largest state sponsor of terror.
Yep.
In the world.
And President Obama is just insistent on appeasing them. It doesn't compute to me if somebody's defending their own country, why they want to engage in all these things I've just mentioned here before. Why does he want to allow hundreds of thousands of people to come into this country illegally if he's the president of the United States and he has the best interest of our country at heart?
Yeah, Abe, go ahead and answer that.
Yeah.
Answer all those.
Well, I mean,
you are a globalist progressive, American exceptionalism and American borders are immoral concepts. And you are doing a disservice to humanity if you have the power to correct immorality and you do nothing about it.
That's where he's coming from, you think, even though he wouldn't say that explicitly?
He's saying it by his actions.
Right. Well, he did say when he was first elected he wanted to, quote, fundamentally transform.
Right.
Now, that's more than make America great again.
His wife said the first time she had ever been proud to be an American was when her husband was elected.
Right. I think this is what drives progressives' hatred of Israel.
That's the reason he hates. He doesn't. I say hate. That's the reason he doesn't care about Israel at all.
Because Israel is the American version of a Middle Eastern country. It's democratic. It's right. Capitalist. Mm. It's successful.
It's an ally. It's been a traditional ally.
It's an ally, and it is an oppressor.
To
the secular progressives. It's a
like America.
An oppressor, right? Of the Palestinian people, which is why I assume that most secular Jews in this country support the Democratic Party, which I think is anti-Israel.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you would think it doesn't make any sense unless your ideology trumps I'm not trying to use that. I can't think of another word besides Trump's.
Supersedes.
I need the attorney to come to my defense.
Supersedes is not running for president, so you can use that.
Supersedes your natural affiliation with the Jewish people. So you're secular Jew, you're progressive first, you're Jewish second.
And you have to add this in. The foundational worldview that drives progressivism is secular humanism,
right?
Which is that human.
There is no God.
There is no God. Mankind is the dominant driver of all society, and it has to be mankind unfettered by that opiate called religion.
Right.
So you have this intellectual superiority complex that's accompanied by that. It's saying, look, even though these ignorant plebeian Americans don't understand what I'm doing, this is best for them as well.
Right. And that's, I go back to what I'm learning about progressives at the turn of the last century. I mean, the 1900s, 1880 to 1920 is the period. But their view was, in fact, I got these amazing quotes, people like Woodrow Wilson, very progressive president, saying, I think too many people are stuck on the Declaration of Independence. We've moved past that. Okay. And their view is that experts trained in universities are the ones who are fit to run the country. And they don't believe in natural rights because they don't believe in God. They believe, these guys come right out and say, government gives rights. And since there is no natural rights for human beings, there is nothing technically stopping the government from doing whatever it wants.
I mean,
just unbelievable stuff that's been sitting around in libraries
now
and books.
But now it's all, if you start putting it all together,
right?
Looking even back past 100 years, you can see the where they're coming from, what they want to achieve.
This is a war against God. Mm-hmm. That's what this is. I don't think that's a stretch. I don't think that's unfair. When you have, what was it, in 2012, I think it was, when the Democratic Party booed the suggestion that God be added. I mean, this is what, the gloves are off. The masks are off. You see an increasingly secular, anti-Christian, anti-God Democratic Party against a Republican Party that's waffling in its commitments to those kinds of ideals. And you get the rest of us looking and saying, I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think unintentionally, the progressive ideology of the Democrat Party revealed itself at the National Convention when the first several days did not have one American flag on the stage.
Yes,
until people commented.
They were only put up there after outside people said, "What in the world? A national political party in the United States doesn't even have an American flag on there." So they only put it up there for, you know, after they were. But the fact that you could put a whole convention floor together and it not bother anybody there that there's not an American flag.
That's my point.
And that's not an oversight.
No.
My belief is not an oversight. You had leaders, party leaders, saying, "No, we don't want." This is not going to be, you know, some jingoistic, you know, America first thing. And then they were only overruled when they understood the possibility of public backlash for not having an American flag.
Well, all this is, can you recommend, are you writing on this?
I'm writing on this, yeah.
When will it?
This will be for the November Journal. But I've been writing on this progressive movement for the last three. So October, which is going to press, will have something. And then I did something on natural law and then the Book of Romans.
Is that online?
Those will be online.
Okay. You're talking about the American Family Association Journal, the AFA Journal, which you get in your mailbox.
Started in August, this series.
If you donate to American Family Association, you get the AFA Journal.
For free.
For free. Well, they paid for it.
Well,
I just said they made a donation.
Well, as a gift.
We can try to trick them if you want to, Ed, and make them think it's free when they paid for it. But I think
as a gift, as a sign of our appreciation.
The president didn't pay for hostage. It was a donation.
Right, but liberals already try that.
Yeah.
You're listening to American Family Radio. Our email address is comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Abe Hamilton. We will return after this short break for another half hour of discussion here on AFR.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.